Welcome to the Hyperion Hub, your meeting place for all things Disney. Now your hosts.
Hello and welcome to the Hyperion Hub.
Everybody.
I'm John Alois and I'm joined by Sean Degenhart.
Hi there.
And John Redling Schaefer.
Sold!
This is the Hyperion Hub, your meeting place for all things Disney. We're glad you're joining us once again. You can join us on social media, follow us there, contact us there, or on email at podcast@thehyperionhub.com. If you have a Disney review for us, send us a voice recorded message at podcast@thehyperionhub.com, and we may play it on the show. If you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, please rate and review. It really does help more people find the show. And wherever you're listening to us, go ahead and subscribe so you never miss an episode.
It's time for our Disney views.
Well, it was announced several months ago, but it has finally happened. The Country Bears Jamboree has seen the end of its run, an opening day attraction at Magic Kingdom. They announced that it would kind of be rethemed, not totally going away, but rethemed to a new show featuring Disney music sung in the style of the Country Bears Jamboree, which will be fun. But there was some news that happened on that final day. The attraction broke down, and so we were just talking ahead of this recording. I wonder how many people that had waited in line and planned on being on that final show didn't get to see the last show.
Yeah, you saw a video from that day. I mean, the lines were egregious.
Right.
I mean, and that's great.
And it's really long.
Yeah, thank you. And that it's a tribute to the history. It's a tribute to the show. Yes. Is it something you can do when it's hot? You just slide into the rows and you watch it. But, you know, those that appreciate the fact that it is one of the original attractions, I'm going to be sad to go in the first time. I hope they almost treat it like Soarin', and once in a while it goes back to the old show. You probably can't do that with animatronics, but overall, a sad day for me.
Well, they used to have another show. They actually had
Christmas.
They had a summer vacation show at one point too. So I don't know how difficult it is to do that, but it would be cool to see, you know, the OG classic every once in a while. But I am going to miss this version for sure. We're going to do a deep dive at some point this year because it is a tremendous story. The Country Bear Jamboree is so.
I've been told we are too old to use the phrase OG.
Oh, you were told?
Yeah.
Okay.
One of my daughters said, "No, you're too old to say OG."
So she was talking to you.
Right. But you're older than me.
But that's the generation that calls us boomers when we're not even close.
That's right.
So, I mean, take it with a grain of salt. No offense to the boomers that listen.
We've got great guests this week. Unfortunately, John Redling Schaefer, you couldn't be a part of this interview, but you're going to enjoy it, I promise.
Great. Look forward to it.
Okay, well, we are thrilled to have joining us on the Hyperion Hub the directors and producer for perhaps my favorite short of all time, Once Upon a Studio, celebrating the studio's 100th anniversary. That special came out, and I probably watched it a dozen times that first day just to try to grab and absorb as much as I could. We had kind of heard the buzz about it months prior, and it was an exciting build-up. So thrilled to have with us directors Dan Abraham and Trent Corey, and producer Brad Simonson. Welcome, guys.
Hey, happy to be here.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
And that was okay. That was you that watched it a dozen times the first day.
I was up in the count.
It was just us, I'm sure.
So let's step back. How far in advance did this concept occur? You know, you got the 100th anniversary looming. Was it months, years? How far ahead of time did you start working on this and imagineering this?
Well, I'll take you back extra far to give you like even more history and context into this, because it has a bit of a unique history. Dan and I pitched a short back in 2019 called Once Upon a Snowman during Frozen 2, and it was the Olaf origin story. And Dan and I, we hadn't worked together at the studio before. We didn't know each other. Dan was in story and I'm in animation. So we didn't cross paths a lot except for on Frozen 2. And when I pitched the short to Jennifer Lee, she paired us up together. Dan was boarding some of the best Olaf stuff from Frozen 2 and musical stuff, and I was supervising Olaf, so it seemed like a really good pairing. And that's how we met. We met making a short called Once Upon a Snowman, and we worked on that during 2019, and it came out right before COVID. And we finished the project, and you guys know, you've been around animation, talked to a lot of filmmakers. It's these things are like, they're never easy. But we had such a good time making the short together. It was just, we're on the same page with a lot of things. We approached things from different perspectives, coming from different departments, but we always had that same goal. And we finished the short after a few months of working on it together. And we're like, how do we do that again? We both went our separate ways. I went off to work on a Zootopia Plus series, and Dan went off to work on the Baymax series. And for about 6 months, we're like, how do we work together again? That was so much fun. And so the very start of this project back in 2020, I got to throw it to Dan for that story, just started from a simple sentence of, how do we work together again?
Yeah, we just both of us had such a great experience with that first project that we were looking for something to do together. And we realized, like, within that same conversation, we're like, well, the 100-year anniversary of Disney Animation is coming up in 2 years. Like, let's put something together that celebrates that milestone. Like, we knew that Disney was making Wish, their feature film, and it was going to, like, touch on the themes that we've done in the past and kind of celebrate Disney Animation in that regard. But it didn't have, like, the legacy characters and things like that. And we really thought, like, boy, wouldn't it be something if we could put together something that not only celebrated all the 100 years of characters, but the artists that created them and all the voice talents and the music and all of those things. Like, wouldn't that be something? And so we just started spitballing together, like, well, what would we want to see? Like, nobody's asking us to do this. Nobody knew we were doing it. So for about 8 months, we would meet at night and on weekends. A lot of it over Zoom because COVID was still happening. But we also did go to a nearby Taco Bell restaurant in our separate cars, drive through the drive-through, and park in the parking lot, and still keeping 6 feet away from each other. But we would talk about what this short could be. And we were having a ball. Like, we just, what if this and what if that? And, like, Trent came up with the really great idea that, well, what if the characters are coming out of the artwork in the walls at the studio here? And we're like, oh man, we were both very, very inspired in our youth from anything of behind the scenes, a peek behind the curtain, like, you know, talking to an animator, like, oh, what little maquettes do they have on their desk or whatever it is. That always, you know, juiced us up and got us really excited and, you know, fueled why we wanted to work at Disney. And so we thought, well, let's place it, you know, our short within the studio and give the general public a little peek behind the curtain. But then, yeah, like Trent came up with the characters coming out of the images, and we thought, well, they're all, why are they gathering? And then we, well, you know, they're going to get together for this 100-year, this photo. So,
And honestly, those we spent about 8 months of working on it nights, weekends, outside of our day job. And we said to each other weekly, like, this could be a huge waste of time. Like, nobody's asking for it. Nobody was asking for a short to be pitched or anything like that. We just were kind of just having a good time sending sketches back.
And we were trying to be realistic, really, because we're like, we are asking for a lot. We're asking for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of characters. We are asking for hand-drawn on paper. We're asking for CG animation. And we're asking for live-action plates. Those are three different pipelines, and that is a lot for one little short to take on. And it's so easy to say no instead of saying yes and then trying to figure it out. But, you know, bless Jennifer Lee when we got in front of her after 8 months of compiling all of our drawings together and that, when we pitched to her, she had no idea why we were pitching anything to her. She didn't know what it was or any of that. And when we went through the story with her and showed her all of our storyboards, she said, I don't know how, but we have to figure out how to make this. And we were just beside ourselves. We really couldn't believe it. We knew we were swinging for the fences, and she said, yes, we have to figure this out.
Yeah, we emailed her out of the blue and just said, Dan and I have something we want to show you. There was no setup for it. And she graciously got back to our email and made time for us that week. And we pitched it over Zoom to her.
Yeah, That's a task in itself. She's sort of the busiest people in Hollywood. I don't know how that happened.
So, and Brad, when did you get involved?
I got involved after the guys pitched Jen, and then for a little while, right, you were working after that. And then how long was it before you pitched the studio?
I think we pitched to Jen in September. Was it October?
October.
October of 2020. And then we pitched to the studio in December of 2020, after having put some of the boards together and working the pitch to Jen. Wanted us to show the whole studio to get them excited and see who wanted to be involved. And that's when Brad reached out.
Yeah. So as soon as they pitched the studio, it was all over Zoom again. So it was one of those town hall Zooms. And they pitched it, and Dan sang the ending. And I immediately, like the second they finished pitching, I emailed Clark Spencer, our president, and I said, I don't know what I have to do to be on this, but I want to produce this. This is going to be amazing. These guys are amazing. I have experience with shooting plates and all the things we would need to do this. I just totally tried to sell him on me. and then our other producer, Yvette Moreno, she literally did the exact same thing. So we emailed within seconds of each other, and then both got on the project. It was great.
I can imagine that was probably the response from a lot of people. I imagine there were a lot of emails going very quickly saying, okay, how do I get involved with this?
That was an amazing experience, actually. The texts, the emails, the people that would then, stop us in the hallways for weeks later, just people saying, I have to be part of this. Even if I have to, like, people would say, I have to, I'll come in on a Sunday and work for free just to touch this thing. Like, because these characters mean so much to the people in this building. It was really an eye opener. Just like, there's no bigger Disney fans than the people that work here. And they care so much about continuing the legacy and the traditions that we've, always upheld and all of that. Like, it was really, really amazing. It was very, very cool.
And when Dan said before that we were asking for a lot and kind of swinging for the fences and had all these characters and we had no idea how we would do it, Brad and Yvette were the answer. They'll figure it out.
Yeah.
They'll figure it out.
What a daunting task, though, to start with. I can't even imagine the amount of characters that you started with and to whittle it down to what you eventually have. And it incorporates not just animation feature films, but shorts as well. And there, I think there were maybe some TV characters in there, too. I do remember, what's the Christmas shorts that were that aired on ABC?
Oh, Prep and Landing.
Prep and Landing.
Oh, yes, you're right. I was shaking my head no, but you're right, because we did do those. Yep.
So how do you even lasso that amount and bring it down to what we see in the final product?
Well, the Prep and Landing ones are interesting because we knew we wanted to represent all of our features, everything from Snow White to the upcoming Wish at the time, and a lot of the shorts in between. And we kind of had a general rule of thumb that if it was created by Disney Feature Animation, that they would earn a place in our short, that would be kind of the rule of thumb. So there are, like, Prep and Landing. We don't do a lot of kind of made-for-TV things, but Prep and Landing was made in our building, and same with Robin from the theme parks was made by Disney animators. So we have these kind of little nods to things outside of our features, but that was the idea to kind of try our best to do justice to the 100 years of features and shorts.
And it, it was hard because every character is not in our short. Like, there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of characters that are not. As big Disney fans and nerds ourselves, like, it sort of pains me every time somebody online's like, oh, you didn't put in so-and-so. And I'm like, I know. We simply couldn't get every single character. Brad and Yvette kept saying to us, you guys have got to stop adding characters. We're not going to get done. We're not going to finish this. Like, you've got to stop. And so we had to, at some point, draw the line and say, okay, I guess we won't have the grasshopper and the ants from the Silly Symphony from, whatever. So it was tough. It's tough, but we did the best we could.
And that, I got to say, that line was drawn pretty late, right, Brad? You let us go pretty far.
Yeah, I remember it differently than Dan. I think I said we might want to consider not adding more because I think I soft sold it a little bit more. It might have felt like that, though, the way he expressed it.
I think you said that at first, Brad, and then eventually it was like, okay, you guys.
Yeah, I think eventually I was like, now we're getting serious. I do remember, you know, there's an old adage about producing where the minute you tell someone no, or the minute you tell a director, no, we can't have that, someone will figure out how to do it. And then you'll be like, oh man. So I try not to say no. Though I do remember the last, was it the White Rabbit was the last one?
Yeah.
So the White Rabbit, I had to bite my tongue because I was like, guys, do we really need the White Rabbit? And Dan's like, it's already in there. I'm like, very good, very good. Maybe consider that as the last one. Like, how about a few more puppies? Like, okay, don't seem like we could do that.
I gotta throw a compliment to Brad. Both Dan and I know this and talk about this a lot, but both him and Yvette, we asked for a lot, and their answer was always, let us try. Let's try and get more. Yeah. It was, can we add more characters? Let's give it a shot. Let's work the numbers and talk to artists and see if there's a smart way to do it. And that's the only way we have over 500 characters in this.
That's what I was going to say is when we were making this, I mean, with CG hand drawn on paper and the live action plates, like there was a lot of swirling question marks on how to put all that stuff together and how to actually accomplish that. And, you know, bless Brad and Yvette for saying, okay, let's think about it. Cause your initial reaction is like, God, there's no way we're going to be able to do that. But like Brad said, like, think about it. Go back to your desk, have the smart technical people or whoever they are, think about it for maybe 10 minutes. And 9 times out of 10, maybe 10 times out of 10, they come up with an answer that'll work. So it, bless you guys for doing that. Cause yeah, it's so easy to say no instead of saying yes and figuring it out.
Well, and I need to give props to Trent and Dan too, because sometimes I'd come back to them and I'm like, hey, I think we can do it, but Dan, do you think you can do cleanup for a while? And Trent, do you think you can do the layout of this shot? And they were like, yes, we can figure this out. So it was an all hands on deck, including them. They were very hands on, actively working very hard on the project.
It was very scrappy. Trent and I storyboarded the whole thing ourselves. And then, yeah, like Trent jumped in and did hand-drawn animation. I jumped in and started doing cleanup animation for the first time in almost 20 years. Then Trent's like, I'll learn how to do sparkles on Tiana's dress. And I'll learn how, like, it was just just in an effort to get these characters in there. Cause like, if we didn't jump in and help, which we actually really wanted to do, and I've never had so much fun as when I was cleaning up Ichabod Crane. It was great because we got to put our hands in so many different pipelines and things and just have fun with everybody else.
So you're dealing with basically three different areas. You've got hand-drawn, you've got the computer, and then you've got the live action, you know, in the studio, in the building. How did you bring those together and reconcile some of those issues of dealing with perspective and sight lines and making sure everybody was lined up on everything they needed to be coordinated on?
Well, I think Brad should answer that, but I'll just say early on, the storyboard process was really important. Dan and I walked around the building with our phones out and kind of scouted the set while boarding. So most of our storyboards have photos in the background, so we kind of knew the shot and knew if it could work the camera angle. And then planning which character was where was really important. And sometimes if we had to cut down 10 seconds or move, you know, Pocahontas to this shot and Jasmine over here and Aladdin over here, you had to make a lot of changes around it. So being really confident of those before going into layout. And then our wonderful layout team actually cut out our storyboards for the 2D characters and had the CG characters and rebuilt our studio in 3D space. This is where I'm going to pass it to Brad, where it gets technical, but they matched our boards based on that before we even shot live action.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly what Trent said, basically. So by scouting and shooting and even the Peter Pan shot, like Trent went and shot individual frames and then actually keyed that, boarded that, you know, over those plates, over those kind of, you know, simple plates. And then, so all the moves were kind of pre-planned. And then we would walk around the studio and look at the locations. We even printed, like, if there was, you know, if there was a piece of artwork that they were jumping out of, we actually printed that and framed it and stuck it on the wall. And we had done that early and did a pre-scout with our team. We hired a really wonderful DP that specializes in second unit. And he was fantastic. And he really guided us through that process. And then we match moved all that. And match move is when you create a camera, a digital camera of the real camera, right? So you get the plate and then you recreate that camera so that then you can get all the set in now in the 3D, in the computer camera. And we LiDAR'd the front of the building. We LiDAR'd all the sets so that we could match to that geometry. It really turned out well. So it was like a little visual effects front end and then into our pipe in layout. And then through the pipe. So,
you know, you talk about the math part of it, and that's not something that we're thinking about as we're watching, as we shouldn't, obviously. But right. The amount of work that went into just the movement shots. You mentioned your director of photography and trying to line everything up. These aren't just still shots, you know, live action with animation walking through. You're moving everything. We're seeing Peter Pan fly through the air and the camera's following all of them. It's just magnificent.
It is pretty important too, especially for the 2D pipeline side of it, because these moving cameras, they have to be, it's not like CG where you have a little more wiggle room for iteration. I mean, the math has to be perfect because if you don't know, our 2D animators, most of it was done on paper, which is great. We really wanted that tactile feel and for the animators to treat these characters like they were when they were created. And so a lot of the times, if they're animating over a live action plate, they're printing out every four frames or every frame onto paper, pegging it and animating to it, just like they would have done on Roger Rabbit, you know. And there's technological advances that we have now where you could have done that digitally, but it was really important, even in the early pitch Dan and I did to Jennifer Lee, that this was done with paper on paper with pencil. And especially our head of animation, Eric Goldberg, our 2D head, he's a master. So watching them work this way was pretty stunning, but you can't change the camera after that. I mean, it turns into a big math problem.
How excited was Eric to be able to bring back these 2D characters?
Like Brad and Yvette and so many others, he put his hat in the ring straight away and said he wanted to lead up the hand-drawn department. And we are so glad he did. What a joy. The only drawback to him doing that, no pun intended, is he did have to do meetings also. So we wanted him to like animate every single shot. Right. And he couldn't obviously take all that on because he had to oversee. We have five new hand-drawn animation trainees that had just joined the studio that he supervised the five of them, plus all of the other hand-drawn stuff by our amazing, you know, Randy Haycock and Mark Henn and Bert Klein and Hyung Min and Tony DeRosa, like all these amazing people. And then Eric also took on overseeing the cleanup animation and the color models for every single character. We had to go back and do like our definitive color models for what everybody before 1990 had to do. Yeah. So and Eric with his animation nerd Rolodex in his head and keen eye was able to jump in and say, you know, no, the inside of Pecos Bill's ear is a little pinker than that, you know, those kinds of things. So that was a lot of fun because he and I are big nerds that way, and I loved talking with him and getting his insight on things, and it was amazing.
Well, yeah, and seriously, I mean, he early on the short, we're talking about complexity and characters. He sat with that first kind of edit of the short and for about 3 hours, right, guys? Like that complexity meeting, and because of Eric's experience in commercials and Disney feature, but also things like Looney Tunes Back in Action and owning his own commercial house in the UK. I mean, he knows how to be really efficient and economical and get more characters and more bang for your buck. So he would go shot by shot with us and say, if you're a little closer on this one, we don't have to show the feet on the ground. That will save animators a day here, and that will save cleanup a day here, and we can copy this over. So he really helped us early on make this thing possible.
Yeah, just really, really smart choices.
Mm-hmm. How did you land on the version of Mickey that you used?
That that's a good question. That all stemmed from our Walt and Mickey moment. We knew we wanted to have that a moment where Mickey would pay tribute to Walt. And I thought, boy, wouldn't it be a nice visual for Mickey to take his hat off and like put it on his heart as he addresses Walt. And I thought, oh, well, Mickey's birthday party in 1942, he's got that cute little yellow hat with the blue shirt. Like, that would be a nice sort of everyman outfit for him to wear. And he could definitely take his hat off for Walt, which we thought would be nice.
And speaking of that moment, I think that was probably my favorite moment in the whole short. I've done some work with the Shermans. So knowing that Richard was playing the piano, I mean, that whole moment was just, I mean, it was the pinnacle for me.
Beautiful. I just watched it again tonight. And as soon as that music changes and you know what's coming, it's goosebumps, it's tears, it's everything that you want, all the emotions that you want to draw up.
Even seeing Mickey's reflection in the picture.
That was Dan that boarded that section. And I'll tell this story to embarrass Dan a little bit, but, I remember when he went off to board that section, he said, these are really hard moments in film. Like, you can overstay your welcome. You can say too much, too little. And we'll probably have to work it a lot, but let me take a first pass. So Dan took his first pass with Mickey in the hat and Walt's portrait. And we knew that we wanted to feed the birds because we knew the history of the Sherman brothers and Walt's, and that was important to us. And we went to the edit room, and Dan had sent it down, and our editor, Mike, had put the music to it. And we're sitting there watching it, and it played one time through. And I remember very clearly, we both looked at each other, and we're like, it works. Like, there was very little adjustment from the get-go. The reflection, Dan's boards were spot on from the get-go.
It was just a beautiful moment.
That reflection, that came from the... Lillian Disney's quote that she had always said that Mickey was Walt and Walt was Mickey. And so I thought, boy, it'd be nice to just have him sort of reflected in the portrait of Walt. And that could be a nice little nod to that.
Wow.
It must have been that week, Dan, right? That we had seen it in edit, and our music, head of music at Disney, Matt Walker, had heard that we played the Richard Sherman piece underneath that. It was just scratch temp score at that point. And Matt stopped Dan and I in the halls, and he was like, hey, I heard you guys have like a Feed the Birds under the Mickey Walt moment. And we're like, yep. And he's like, why don't we get Richard to perform it for your short? And we're like, what? That hadn't even crossed our minds yet. I don't know what the plan was, but we're like, are we allowed to? Can we do that?
And yeah, so I'm sure you guys have heard this story, but Matt set it up so that on a Friday afternoon, we went up to Walt's office on the lot, just the same exact place, the same exact piano that Richard used to play for Walt on Friday afternoons. And we he comes in, Richard Sherman comes in at 94 years old at the time. So gracious, so lovely and friendly. And he sits down, he just starts playing Spoonful of Sugar and just goes to town on that piano like it's an old friend. And that's one of the happiest days of my life. I am going to remember that forever and ever. And I feel so like when Trent and I were fantasizing in those 8 months about this short and what this could be, like we didn't know we could dream that big. Like that was amazing.
And you've got all that footage and you'll be releasing it at some point of him, everything else he did at the piano. I remember Jeff Sherman, Robert's son, saying, when he was touring Walt's office, he was tried to play the piano, and the tour guide said, "No, nobody plays that but Richard." He said, "But I'm a Sherman," and they said, "No, nobody plays that but Richard." So so special.
Well, and you know what? That that footage is on Disney Plus now under extras of Once Upon a Studio. We have from that day. They were nice enough to record it all for us.
I think it's actually on YouTube now too.
Oh, it might be on YouTube.
Yeah.
There's a question I have to ask. In terms of synergy, did you ever consider the other animation studios, now under the Disney umbrella? So Pixar, Lucasfilm, 20th Century, was there ever a consideration for the other studios to be a part of this short?
Not once from day one of the short. The short was specifically a, not because we don't love those studios, but because this was a celebration of Disney Animation, which started in 1923. So it was always Disney Animation and those characters. We sent a note out to the studio saying, let us know your favorite movies and characters and if you have any thoughts. We did get a lot of people saying, "Hey, what about Woody in there?" But this was a celebration of Disney Animation specifically.
And that when we first started working on this, the very first conversation we had, and we came up with having it at the studio, like it wouldn't have made sense for any characters that we didn't create to be on the artwork in our hallways. Like that doesn't make any sense. So it would have had to have been a completely different short. And we really liked showing people behind the curtain. And we did want to celebrate the studio that Walt started 100 years ago.
An absolute treat. This was the first part of our conversation with Dan Abraham, Trent Corey, and Brad Simonson, the creators of the epic short Once Upon a Studio. If you haven't watched this amazing short before or recently, I highly encourage you to watch it on Disney Plus or YouTube. It's magnificent. More on the making of it and other thoughts next week in part two. A reminder about the next Disney Fest in Peoria, Illinois. This will be at the Peoria Riverfront Museum the weekend of March 22nd through the 24th. Special guest speakers include author J.B. Kaufman and director-producer Ted Thomas, the son of Disney legend Frank Thomas. More details to follow the closer we get to March 22nd. Till then, make sure you follow us on social media. Email us at podcast@thehyperionhub.com. Send us a voice-recorded message, and we may play it on the show. Until next week, happy Valentine's Day, and happy birthday to my Valentine, Jolie. Have a great week, everyone.
We're glad you could join us. We'd love to hear from you. You can email or send us a recorded audio message at podcast@thehyperionhub.com. Find us on social media. The Hyperion Hub is not affiliated with the Walt Disney Company or its subsidiaries. We'll meet you next time at the Hyperion Hub.